The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Welcome to Top 5, a show where you've got a Brian, a Rob, and a Matthew. Yes, we're talking this week about things that have stuck around too long. Oh, wait.
Aww.
This is a listener request.
That's me.
Top 5 things that have stuck around too long. And I've got some good ones on my top 5 list. I don't know about you guys, but...
I'm not telling you now.
Well, let's start with you, Matthew. What do you have for your top 5 list?
Well, it's a list of 5 things, generally arranged around a theme. And this week, that theme is things that stuck around too long. And I say this, you know, having known you for over 30 years, you're not on the list, you big meanie. But there is one thing. The first thing that pops into my head as a something that stuck around too long is actually not like a series or something that had too many sequels or something that, you know, just didn't know when to stop, which I'm sure we'll have a ton of examples of. But instead, it's a film that went about 15 minutes longer than it really should have. And part of that was due to the death of the original director and the replacement of that director with a director named Steven Spielberg, with whom Steven is probably familiar. And the weird thing for me about the film AI, Artificial Intelligence, from 2001, is that the part of it that went on too long, the last bit of the film, basically the main character is a little boy who's also a robot. And he's a robot who was created to be a beautiful little boy and never grow up, so that rich people could have beautiful little boys and never have to deal with them being grown up things. And throughout the movie, he keeps wishing that he's going to become a real boy, and he ends up frozen in the Arctic ice, staring up at a little statue of the blue fairy. Pinocchio theme, fade to black. But it's a Spielberg movie, and Spielberg feels compelled to give us a happy ending. And I'm entirely projecting on Spielberg here. So if that's not right, Steve, feel free to hit us up, podcast@majorspoilers.com. We know you're listening. But the last, I want to say 10, 15 minutes, it may be less, it may be more, features the robot David, as we'll call him, Haley Joel David, waking up in a world where, and there are different reads on this, but I go with the read that the creators had to explain after the fact, which, by the way, tells you how this last portion of the film is successful, where it's actually robots who have evolved over like 20,000 years, and he wakes up, and the last 15 minutes are a completely different movie. And it's a movie that I love because it appeals to everything that I love, which is to say schmaltz, deep, weird emotions that you're not supposed to talk about, and more than likely unpleasantly Freudian implications. You know, my mother died, and I deal with that, and I own that. But the last chunk of this movie just doesn't belong. And if you had ended AI at the point where David dies frozen in the ice with his teddy bear, you'd have a very Kubrick, very bleak, very artistically sound kind of downer ending where you can say, well, it ended badly because art. Whereas instead you get a movie that ended badly because art, and then ended slightly less badly by putting a great big party hat on top of the art. And basically what you kind of get is an armadillo in leg warmers. And that's why it's my number 5, an armadillo in leg warmers.
Okay. Sticking with the theme there. Yes, definitely, Matthew. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number five?
My number five is The Simpsons. And
I knew it would be in here. I knew one of y'all would hit it.
Yeah. I really don't have anything against The Simpsons. And there have been recent episodes of The Simpsons that I've happened to catch that I actually like. But it's interesting to talk to other people about The Simpsons, because once you get past this idea that like The Simpsons used to be good and now it's not good anymore, or The Simpsons was good, wasn't good, and now is good again, it is interesting to see the relationship that people have with The Simpsons. And it's pretty complex. And I feel that the longer The Simpsons goes, the more muddied that relationship becomes for all of us. The impact that the show has long since been diluted. We are now really at a point where someone literally just made a documentary about damaging stuff in The Simpsons. And as this sort of media juggernaut that just won't die, it just kind of continues to collect issues about it, right? Whereas you can look at something like, I don't know, anything. Leave It to Beaver, All in the Family, anything that came and went, and say, well, here is this cultural moment in which this was created. Seeing The Simpsons in that light is just like a mess, because, you know, it's just kind of continuity-wise, not that continuity is a big deal, and also sort of artistically, The Simpsons just kind of is gigantic and problematic and weird.
But, yeah, they're at a point now where the flashbacks to the youth of Bart and Lisa take place years after the show actually started.
Right.
We're at a point where Bart and Lisa were born in the 21st century.
Yep. That's
because
right.
They're 10 and it's almost 2018 now. And it's something where I watch episodes where they flash back to Homer's life and how Homer was a kid in 1997.
Right.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Right. That's exactly right. It just gets weirder and weirder. And you know, there's that whole like Simpsons did it thing, you know, that South Park popularized by saying, well, screw you guys, we're going to do it anyway. But now we're really getting to the point where Simpsons did it to The Simpsons.
Right. Like, right.
It's just, there's only so many like permutations of a story that you can do for 20 minutes that are going to appeal to that, you know, Fox audience on Sunday. And The Simpsons has basically done them all and is now in the process of kind of doing them all again. Cause we have seen, you know, the like Homer, like back or flashback to Homer, Courts, Marge, right? And it was in the 70s the first time around. Now it's in the 90s. And it's just, again, there's only just so many places you can go. And if you go someplace different, someplace weird, someplace that might be more interesting, you are lugging around those, like, now what, like 30 years of of continuity, of audience investment and stuff. So there are just places where the show can't go. Even if they were like, this is going to be the all new, all different Simpsons, we're going to change stuff around and make it new and fresh, people would riot, because part of the reason why people watch The Simpsons is because it's always been around.
Yeah. Right? And this is quite literally, for a lot of people, it has been around since the day they were born. And it will continue probably until the day their kids are born.
We joke about, and by we, I mean Steven, how old Steven and I are.
Oh, I never joke about that.
The Simpsons, as a standalone series, predates this, but it actually debuted on my 19th birthday.
Yeah, see, you're old.
I am. I'm like 46 years old, and this is a show that debuted the day I turned 19. And you have to kind of look at it. And this is something else that's important. When Steven and I were in college, words are important and hardly like. When Steven and I were in college, I remember quite clearly having a discussion with someone who wanted to tell me how The Simpsons wasn't funny anymore. So that discussion has been being had for over 25 years at this point.
Yeah, so it's getting to the point where the peripheral stuff to The Simpsons, like, for example, the discussion of the value of The Simpsons is itself so old that nobody even wants to have it anymore. Yeah. They're like, right. Well, The Simpsons stopped being fun, and everybody's like, ah.
Oh, God, I'm so tired of this argument.
We're not going to talk about this again, are we?
I guess it's a longer discussion for another show, but the question of, is The Simpsons just on because it's always been on? And therefore it will never end is a bigger question, but maybe that'll come up a little bit later in some of our other, top five items. When we find out some things that may have stuck around too long and realize they stuck around too long and then they went away. Mm-hmm. My number five. Wow. It's been around for forever. Started in 1878. If you can believe this.
What?
Yes. 1878. Department store was trying to get rid of all of their white stuff because it's the winter time. And hey, who wants to buy white in winter? You're supposed to wear white in the summer and not after Labor Day, right? And so John Wanamaker in 1878 started the first white sale where they sold bed linens. And ever since, we end up in January hitting these white sales that have nothing to do with linens anymore. It's all about cookware and household items and furniture and all these other things. White sale was a good gimmick at the time. It's definitely something that stuck around too long. And every time I have the misfortune of turning on regular television, broadcast, cable, whatever television with commercials, I always hit it right at the time when it's a white sale. And I'm like, really? Seriously? People are still doing this? No one goes to department stores and buys this stuff anymore. Quit fooling yourself. The white sale, my number five thing that has stuck around too long.
So long that I don't even know what that is, man.
Yeah. Matthew, yeah,
knew the origin
of the white sale. Yeah. Yeah. Matthew, what do you have for your number four?
Interestingly, as someone who, as I mentioned, is in my 40s, I have a lot of favorite memories of pop culture where I go, I love this. I love this. I love this. I love this. Wait a minute. Okay. What? No, no, no. Stop. Stop with the Ted Mosby stop. But my number four is one. It was, I think, maybe the first time that I said to myself, okay, they've lost a step. They're done. They need to wrap this up. When I was a child in the 1970s, see if you can sing something from the 70s, Rodrigo.
Dancing Queen.
There you go. Perfect. Because Flock of Seagulls would be too late. My grandmother and grandfather used to sit and we would watch the programs of Norman Lear. And one night, probably the most emotionally arresting bit of television in my youth happened. And it happened thanks to Carol O'Connor on an episode of All in the Family, where Archie woke up, was wandering around his house, and remember, by this point in the show, if you're not familiar with it, Archie started out as this bigot who played off of his liberal son and his wacko hippie daughter and his cloud cuckoo lander wife, basically. And at the end of a previous season, the kids had moved away, and Archie looked down and found a slipper and picked it up and started crying. And I'm like, I watched this for, you know, fart jokes and Sammy Davis Jr., and Carol O'Connor is in tears talking about how Edith died. And I'm like, my God, this is really good. It's a really wonderful bit of television where this man is dealing with the death of his beloved wife. And then the show kept going. And then the show kept going. And then they renamed it something else because it was literally no longer All in the Family. And the show kept going. And I was just done. I couldn't understand, you know, I'm 7 years old sitting and watching this TV and going, guys, you're clearly done. You're finished. You've run out of stuff. I mean, the Dukes of Hazzard will be on soon because I could see into the future and it was still 2 years away. But that's not the point. When you get to a point in the show where you have that incredible, perfect moment and it wraps everything up and it takes this character who was terrible and gives him finally closure, it gives him something, and yes, it's a tragic ending. And I, you know, as I said in my number five, sometimes we have those tragic endings because art. You get to a point where he has that ending, he learns his lesson, he's no longer a jerk, but the show keeps going and the premise of the show is still there. So he has to unlearn his lesson. And Archie unlearned his lesson for another three seasons after that perfect ending moment. And that I think was one of the moments where rare moments in the 70s where Norman Lear really missed the boat. A lot of his stuff was just excellent, perfect, solid, emotional television. And this one didn't work for me. So I'm going to go with my number four, Archie Bunker's Place, which is technically the last couple of seasons of All in the Family.
Yeah. Rodrigo, what is your number four?
My number four is something that has definitely been around for way too long. It's long overstayed its welcome. And I personally can't wait until it finally goes away. And that's that popcorn kernel that I got stuck in my tooth. Man. I mean, just, it's just like in the perfect place. I can't get it with floss. I can't, obviously can't get it with a toothbrush. And it is just completely wedged in there. And like, because of that, I think it has shaped itself like so that it's like poking at my gums.
Mm-hmm.
And so every once in a while, like it's been there so long that sometimes I'll forget about it. And then when I do, it just reminds me that it's there by like poking my gums. And I'm like, oh, that thing's still in there. It's just terrible. I'm sure that lots of people have had similar situations.
Yeah.
But it's just so distracting, you know?
Oh, yeah. I have a beef jerky that spent more time in my teeth than the duration of my first marriage. Yeah. So
there you go.
It's just unbelievable.
There you go.
Come on, get it together, me.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Rodrigo, get that
Rodrigo's
get that
teeth.
Oral hygiene going.
I'm trying.
If you get one of those like water picks that's basically a little hose.
I just really feel like if I have to go out and buy hardware, the kernel has won.
My number four is something that's still around and I think has maybe stuck around too long. They are all the rage, I think. The company has just built a brand new headquarters. They just opened a new store where you can build your own. And they're about $323 million in debt, if I remember correctly, from Ooh. their most recent
ventures.
Yes, they're cute, but I think they've overstayed their welcome. I think they've flooded the market too much, and I think that they've stuck around too long. I am, of course, talking about the Pop Vinyls from Funko.
Ooh. Oh yeah,
those creepy.
Don't get me wrong. When they first came out, I thought they were cool, and I have a bunch of them. But now it's like when our Hastings closed and I went in, there was literally the length of the store.
A graveyard.
Yeah, there was the length of the store had Pop Vinyl figures from, you know, like 7 feet up down to the floor for, God, it had to have been about 30 yards worth. And at that time I said, you know what? Pop Vinyls are over. And then they keep putting them out and they keep cranking them out and they keep coming up with different things. They've bought two other toy companies to merge into them. They've got about 300 employees worldwide, not counting the manufacturer that makes their stuff in China. But I think they've oversaturated the market. And unfortunately, when that happens to me, that means you've stuck around too long and it's time to say goodbye, Funko Pops. That is my number four. Matthew, what do you have for number three?
Number three kind of comes back from the realm of the television because, you know, television is fine and all, but I'm a comic book nerd at heart. And when you talk about comics, it's difficult to say that something outstayed its welcome because one of the most popular comics in the world right now debuted in 1939. So when you have a Batman who's been around for 80 years and a Wonder Woman who's been around for 40 and a Spider-Man who's been around for 65, that math does not work out. Since 1940, not for 40 years. Stay with me here. Sometimes it's hard to say that a series has outlasted its welcome, but I'm going to tell you one that has. My number three is a series that had a perfect ending the better part of 15 years ago on issue 16 of The Runaways. Runaways was a series about these six kids who discovered every child thinks that their parents are evil. These guys are right. And they discovered that their parents are all evil supervillains who run the West Coast. awesomely, it's an explanation of why all the superheroes are on the East Coast in the Marvel Universe. They're being manipulated by this group of supervillains on the West Coast. And we go through and they have their whole thing. And I'm not going to spoil it for you because there's a big, big, huge change here moment about halfway through that first series. And then it ends. And it ends in a perfect place where you're just like, that is such a great self-contained series. Kids have their thing. They do their thing. They end. They stop. And then those characters go by the wayside, like Jack Knight or Morpheus, a character who, if the creator isn't there, doesn't continue wandering around. Mm-hmm. And that's not what happened with Runaways. And Runaways basically went from the hands of, I think that's a Brian K. Vaughan joint, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay. It went from the hands of Brian K. Vaughan into the hands of Joss Whedon. And I'm not saying Joss Whedon's a bad writer by any means, but his Runaways, to me, was not Runaways. And then it went to Terry Moore, who I felt was excellent on Strangers in Paradise. But his Runaways, also not really Runaways. For me, the best Runaways story post that original arc turned out to be a subplot in Avengers Arena, which is a series that I hate because it basically said, hey, here's 16 teenagers. Let's watch them all die. But had Runaways ended where it should have ended, where it naturally had that breaking point, it would today be remembered as an amazing, excellent series that just stopped. There's a new Runaway series at Marvel. I kind of enjoyed the first couple of issues. Not going to lie to you. I'm not going to say that I didn't enjoy reading those comics. But every page, every panel, I'm like, I really feel like this should have ended. I love what you're doing here, but I feel like it should have ended.
I mean, definitely. Vaughn did two additional volumes of Runaways. Mm-hmm. He did the first one, and then they brought him back. And I enjoyed those. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like he had to retcon his own series, like, because he just tied it so well together. That is like first few pages of the second volume. It's like, oh, yeah, we thought this was the case, but it's really this. And I'll like already like I was so on board for it. I love the first volume of Runaways, but I was like, oh, yeah, this is already starting to feel weird.
Yep. You go back and you're like, rub, 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 erase the chalkboard. And now we're back to this point. And I'm like, but I read the comics where that happened, guys.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool. Rodrigo, what is your, what are we on? Three?
I'm on three.
All right. What is your number three?
My number three is something that I actually thought was gone. I had not seen one of these in a long time. And maybe appropriately, they're only raised for the dead or from the dead for Halloween. And that is a Heath bar.
Oh, yeah.
I had not seen a Heath bar in years. And I think that's because they're very rare in the wild. And you only get them in value packs for Halloween, right? In like bags that you buy that have small, individually bite-sized wrapped pieces. And they need some sort of filler, so they throw in Heath. And Heath is, it's basically Butterfinger. Like, it's, that's kind of what it tastes like to me. But it's
got
like
more of a toffee.
Yeah, it's got toffee kind of, in it.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, it has a crunch and then like a stick. You know, it's like, you can like crunch into it and then you have trouble opening your mouth again because it's sticking in there and it exacerbates the kernel. And it's just, I mean, it's not great. And I understand that you need to keep stuff like that. It's why, you know, if you buy just like a bag of non-chocolate candy that has an assortment, you'll get those like tiny spherical jawbreakers. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know that anybody goes, oh boy, Halloween, I sure hope I get a bunch of tiny spherical jawbreakers. They're kind of like this. They're the medium that all the good candy swims in. And that's kind of how I feel with about Heath when you get a Mars thing? Mm-hmm. A bag of Mars candy. So yeah, my number three, Heath. Also, I'm sorry, but doesn't Heath mean swamp?
I believe it is a similar part of the general architecture of the universe, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Heath bar been around since 1914, shortly after the giant the giant chocolate flood in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Go look that up. That's an interesting
I remember
piece
that.
Of history.
Yeah. I was there twice.
If
time travel is
ever
crazy.
Had a score bar, it is mm-hmm. basically the same thing as a Heath bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, score chocolate is a little denser. Score chocolate feels more like American chocolate, whereas Heath has more of an element of kind of a Swiss or French chocolate. And the texture is different, but the interior is almost exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Both by the same company, too.
Yeah. Fat Man knows our chocolate is what I'm saying.
My number three, I know this is controversial, but social media.
Oh.
Your Facebooks, your Twitter especially, you know, pick one. Instagram I'm okay with. What's the Snapchat? Just what
Snapchat is for kids.
Snapchat. Look and see what's on Snapchat. That's only for 21 and up. And only on late night when the bars tell you they can go blue.
It depends when you're following, who you're following, you had to pay to follow them.
No, no. If you go and look, open up your Snapchat and you look at the, here's what's happening. This is coming from Snapchat. And was it like 2 weeks ago? It was like dildos, masturbation, and something else. Like three sex things in a row that they were promoting as things for people to follow. And I was like, what? And I was like, I don't think that's just me, because then four other people posted it and said, what the heck is Snapchat doing? There's no way I can let my kid on this. But, you know, one of the nice things about Twitter and Facebook and, you know, does allow us to engage with people, right? And to share messages and to get information out and to see people's thoughts. But so much of the last couple of years on social media has turned into just the most toxic swamp of ooze you could ever sink your teeth into. And you really shouldn't sink your teeth into toxic swamps of ooze. Save that for the Heath bar.
A Heath of ooze, if you will.
A Heath of ooze, if you will. But oh my gosh, just, you know, you dive in and just how hateful people are. And the fact that even the people that run the social media sites don't even stick to their own rules and their own guidelines, and they're letting things happen that shouldn't be happening. It's if I didn't have to use them for work at Major Spoilers, I would just turn them off completely, because there's nothing better than walking away from social media for an entire weekend or even part of a day and just be going, you know what? I feel so much better not having to be around the hate. And I would argue that there is more hate in social media then there's positive messages in social media. So social media, you've stuck around too long. Go away or change. That is my number three.
Well, that people don't like change either. I mean, Twitter has been saying for years, people have been saying about Twitter for years that the 140 requires a level of brevity that makes you imprecise in your communication. So they give them more letters. And the same people are like, well, 280 ruins the whole point of it. And I'm like, well, you can't have it both ways. But yes, I agree with you. Mm.
Interesting insight. Matthew, what do you have for number two?
I have Chat Snap on number two. No, that's not true. My number two is nearer and dearer to my heart than nearly anything we have discussed thus far. And that's why it hurts me so bad to have to say that Scrubs went a full two seasons too long. A full two seasons too long, because at the end of season six of Scrubs, our main character, and I realize this is a theme for me, but our main character was at his lowest point and everybody else was having a happy ending. And it looks like the show is done, right? So one character, they kill her off to give everybody some emotional resolution. And his girlfriend finds happiness with her new husband. And, you know, his best friend goes off and raises a family. And he has to deal with the fact that he's become an isolated jerkwad narcissist, fade to black, because art. But then they did season eight. And I can justify season eight on the sole strength of the final episode of Scrubs, which is quite possibly the most perfect wrap-up final episode I've ever seen. not just content to bring back, you know, oh, let's bring back this guy who left the show. They brought back nearly every side character, every bit player. Characters who died showed up again in JD's Final Fantasy. And as he's leaving the hospital for the last time on his last day, everyone who ever affected his life for 8 seasons is there to tell him goodbye. And then he steps out on his last little fantasy sequence is what his life is going to be like with his new daughter and his happy wife and all of the things that are going to happen. And it's a perfect ending. And then ABC says, hey, you're renewed for season 9. Frickin' ABC ruins everything. And season 9 is actually almost a different show because season 9 is different characters who are, they're in medical school learning from the doctors that we've been watching Scrubs for 8 seasons for. And if you actually catch it in syndication, and I think in DVD, they rename it Scrubs: Medical School. Because somebody realizes this is not the same show. And I'm just heartbroken, especially now because, you know, this last summer, Scrubs came back into syndication rotation of the channels that I have. So you can start seeing it again. Whereas, you know, 5 years ago, it was invisible. And 2 years before that, I was recording every episode. But I'm just so sad when I see that 9th season because it should have ended with 7. It could have ended perfectly with 8. It just kept escaping that chopping block and coming back worse for wear, and that's why Scrubs is my number 2.
Right. You know, for me, you know how sometimes you'll go back and see the pilot of a show, and you'll be like, "Yeah, they didn't know who these characters were going to be. They were working things out. This is not what the show is like."
Right.
Scrubs is the opposite. Like Scrubs had like perfect. Like had all the characters' voices there already. The characters were kind of at their funniest and like most incisive at the very inception of it. And it just kind of like, I mean, it went different places and it was good, but go back and watch that pilot and it's like, it's still funny and it's still good.
Yes. And it's brutal and it's less.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's less silly. And it also has that moment, that beautiful moment where throughout the episode, we're thinking Kelso is one thing. And finally he walks up to Kelso and names the show. We get that title drop. Do you realize you're nothing more than a large set of scrubs to me? And it's like, oh God, that is such a perfect moment. And of course, then 9 seasons after that, Kelso is still the same jerk. He never learned a lesson. I love that.
Yeah. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number 2?
My number 2 is also something that is kind of near and dear to our hearts. And it's something that, as I age, I've just softened up, but I just look at, like, walk out onto my digital porch of the internet, and people are still going on and on about this. And I am like, why? There's no point. Nobody cares. Stop arguing whether Marvel is better than DC.
Oh, God.
Right? And it's like, right now, as far as movie properties, Marvel is in its apogee, right? And it's been doing really well for a really long time. And so all the Marvel kids are using this as like a flag to rally around. It's like, yep, it's over. Put a fork in it. Marvel has won. And I'm like, why does it matter? First off, there are more than 2 comic book companies.
Right.
Second, why does it matter? Third, why does it matter? You know, it's like, if you go back and look at the history of comics and how close, we've come to having, for example, a lot of those properties under a single company, or if you consider something like, you know, you're like, oh yeah, yeah, Shazam and Superman or Captain Marvel and Superman and all those guys, it's like, Captain Marvel didn't used to be a DC comic. Captain Marvel was a lawsuit waiting to happen, and then that did happen. And then eventually, you know, when Fawcett went under, like, DC just scooped it up. It's like all of these are just things to read and things to watch and things to have fun with. And, you know, it's like nobody says, like, what's better, the Marvel Cinematic Universe or Harry Potter? You know, it's like, well, why not? It's, you know, it's the same idea. It's like, if you look at all of the Harry Potter movies, is like there's enough there, at least, or there was for a while, where you could be like, well, is Prisoner of Azkaban better than Age of Ultron? It's like, well, why would you even compare it? And that's how I feel about everything, right? It's like, is this new Justice League movie going to be as good as the Avengers? And it's like, it shouldn't be comparable, you know? Like, it shouldn't matter. DC's superheroes are different than Marvel's superheroes. That's kind of where all this came from in the first place, is that, you know, now, DC was doing big cosmic things with their superheroes, and Marvel was like scrappy, like, eh, we're going to come in and we're going to do real life stories. Peter Parker's life sucks, you guys. Mm-hmm. And during that time, both companies have reversed their focus on those things, like gone back and forth like 50 times. There's a million characters for each of these companies, some of which are clear copies of the other guys, some of which are like degrading copies of a copy of the other guy. Like, it's crazy. Like, there's no reason to have these fights. There's no reason for, you know, people who enjoy pop culture like this to divide themselves along these lines for companies that really just want your money and are all eventually going to be owned by Disney. So stop fighting. Stop the madness. Just read the books you want to read, and don't not pick up an interesting book, or don't keep yourself from watching a good, what could potentially be a movie you like, because you are wearing the, you know, a red shirt or a blue shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one. My number two, I think it just has to be cable television in general, but network television specifically. Talk about something that hasn't figured out how to evolve in the last, you know, I would say 15, 20 years, 20 years, let's say. And especially in the last five, with the onslaught of people who want a la carte television, who mm-hmm. want to be cable cutters, who want to binge watch everything over a weekend or at their own time. Network television is like your grandfather's TV, literally. It is still stuck in a very old mode of thinking, in that we have to release this thing at this time. It has to be this long. It has to have this many commercials. It has to air on this time. And we're going to air these shows between this date and this date and this time and this time. And that's not how people consume their entertainment anymore. And every time I sit down to watch network television, I'm just aghast at how backwards it all seems, how ancient it seems. And it seems like it's just stuck around too long because, like I was mentioning with some of these other things, that's just the way it's always been, Simpsons. That's just the way it's always been. We've done it this way forever, and we're not going to change. And if we do change, we're going to follow the same problematic issues that we have right now, but call it CBS streaming service or whatever the thing is, where they're still releasing things in a seasonal format at a weekly rate, and they're not giving the viewer what they want. And it's just like, come on, guys. So network television, it's time to give up those FCC airwaves for something better. Move it all online. Make it all a la carte. Just change your method of doing things, and I think you'll find that your money will stick around. In fact, you may find that you have even more money. But network television, I can't stand you anymore. You've stuck around too long. All right, I think we've done 5, 4, 3, 2, and now we are ready for our number ones.
Number one.
What kind of things will appear as the thing that stuck around too long? And Matthew, what will you bring us?
Too long. I will bring you a beloved piece of pop culture.
Ooh, is it,
I will bring you.
Is it Rudolph the Red Nose? Is it Rudolph the Red Nose Reindeer?
How dare you?
Is it the Peanuts? You're the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown?
No, no. Those are both beautiful treasures of modern art and should be viewed once a year with your child. How dare you? Oh, Peppermint Patty is such a dick in that cartoon. Now I'm mad at you and Peppermint Patty. No, my number one is
Surf
a beloved
Nazis
piece.
Must die.
God, it's a beloved piece of pop culture. dating from the year 1994, a time when everything was weird and grungy, and it really kind of birthed a new subculture, counterculture, sub-counterculture. It birthed another culture under the counter. But it also birthed a number of sequels. And the thing about sequels to a story is your story has to have a setting that is workable for sequels. And when your story is the story of a man whose girlfriend is killed, who is left for dead, who dies horribly, comes back from the dead, kills the guys who killed his girl, balances the scales of justice and retribution, and goes back to his grave, it's a little hard to pull together a sequel. And so The Crow, the film adaptation of James O'Barr's comic, is a beautiful movie. It's a lovely movie. And it's a movie that I think has kind of a heightened sense of its own meaning, partly because of the death of its star during the creation of the film. You know, that up-and-coming young actor is killed during this movie, and they put it together, and they deliver it as a tribute to him. And you're kind of like, oh, I want to see this. What's it all about? So you see it, and it's good. And even with its flaws, it's good. And then they're like, well, we're going to do another one. We're going to do The Crow's City of Angels. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to do a TV show. We're going to resurrect the guy who died and then died again. And we're going to have a show called The Crow, Stairway to Iron Chef. And that's a joke entirely for Rodrigo. And then, of course, you're going to have The Crow, the kid from Terminator's in it this time. And then The Crow, I think this guy was in a Punisher movie for about 5 minutes. And it just kind of shakes itself to pieces. And it's really sad because that first story, first of all, the comic series is beautiful, untranslatable. You couldn't put that on film. You certainly couldn't get people to pay for it. It's a beautiful story, but it's very, very, very emo. So they managed to make a movie that works in spite of its own flaws and in spite of the fact that if you pay attention to two really important plot points that are never explained, that movie doesn't make a damn bit of sense. But it's emotionally satisfying in a way that the busted plot line cannot ruin. And then they come back to the well, and they come back to the well. And I've said it before, and I will say it again. I love cliches, and you cannot catch lightning in that same bottle. And if you do, you're going to want to run away because you won't be catching lightning a third time. And I mean, it is really difficult to do a successful sequel. It's really difficult to do a sequel to a film where not only does the main character die, but the actor who portrayed him and inhabited the role died. And, you know, it's there's so many strikes against you trying to make a Crow sequel. I'm stunned that they made one. I'm super stunned that they made five of them. And I'm really stunned that Chairman Kaga's nephew was killed and brought back from the dead. So for me, my number one is The Crow for two reasons. One, because it really emotionally affected 23-year-old Matthew. And two, Food Network puns are really the best.
Yeah. They are working on yet another Crow movie. I think this one's a total remake.
You know what they're going to call it?
The Crow.
The Crow, back to the well.
Yep. Literally. Rodrigo, what is your number one?
My number one is racism.
All right.
Really?
That's it. No explanation needed. Yeah, it stuck around for too long.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
No, totally
to get
right
rid
there.
Of it.
F yeah. That noise.
Yep, I totally agree. My number one, Happy Days. It is one that realized it's a show that realized that it stuck around too long, especially after Fonzie wearing a leather biker jacket literally jumped the shark, which is where we get the term jumping the shark.
You know, Henry Winkler will tell you the show was number one in the ratings for a full 2 years after he jumped.
It totally was. But at that point, it was kind of like, well, there's nothing else. We've only got three channels. What else are we going to watch? I guess we'll watch Happy Days because Mork from Work is going to make an appearance in it. Yeah.
I mean, it's
Happy Days. So just kind of put this in perspective. Happy Days started. What year did that start? That started in like 1974.
It started as an episode of American Love American Style in 74.
Yeah. started in 74. So I remember seeing that in 74, and it didn't go off the air until 84. And I remember somewhere around 1980, right around the time Battlestar Galactica 80 came out, I was like, I'm kind of done with Happy Days, and I don't want to watch it anymore. And yet it still went on and on and on. And I think finally they just figured out that it's time for the show to shut down. I mean, this show's been on longer than the entire decade of the 50s. So yeah, my number one, Happy Days, a thing that stuck around way too long, could have gone for 5 years and just ended on a high note when Richie went off to, what war did he go off to? He didn't go off to Vietnam.
Korea.
Did he go off to Korea?
But it had to have been Korea. Well, no, because the show was in 57.
Yeah.
Did Richie go off to war? Are you sure Richie went off to war?
Richie Cunningham went off to war.
I don't think he did. I think Richie Cunningham went off to college.
Did he?
And Chuck Cunningham just disappeared off the end of the pier. Lo, did he go upstairs with his basketball, never to be seen again? Achoo.
He went off to war and he died and he became a disembodied voice that torments the Bluths.
No, he went after graduating from University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He and Ralph Mouth served a short stint in the U.S. Army and was stationed in Greenland. And that's where he married Lori Beth over the phone, because I remember that episode going, how stupid is this, where she's all dressed up in a wedding, you know, her wedding gown. And I think they were at Fonzie's Garage at the time. And they had the whole wedding ceremony, and Richie calls in like at the very last minute. You hear him say, I do. And that's about it. And then there you go.
Yeah, but it would have been too early for Vietnam and too late for Korea.
Yeah.
And also, there were no wars in the 50s in Greenland, to my knowledge.
Well, of course, you're going to put him somewhere safe where he doesn't have to deal with any of that, and the show's producers don't have to deal with anti-Vietnam sentiment that goes in that. But there you go.
Well, that show was more about the 70s than it was about the 50s.
I know, right? And that's the weird
thing.
Just
like
that
70s show was about the 90s more than it was about the 70s. Mm-hmm. And the Goldbergs is now about the 2010s more than it is about the 80s. But by probably in the next 3 or 4 years, we're going to see a show that's set in the 90s talking about the sequels to The Crow.
I think it's called The Simpsons.
Hmm?
Yeah.
And now we're cha-ching.
Yep, there you go. You guys have anything else on your list that has stuck around too long?
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, for me, definitely Saved by the Bell. I think it was like 2008 before the final like twisting tendril of Saved by the Bell kept going. I mean, it was like a new class, and like somehow Screech was still there, and
Screech was like the principal's assistant.
Terrible.
They went off to college and they got married, and somehow Zach grew up to be Slater. I'm not sure how that worked.
Actually, a lot of successful sitcoms in the 90s, 80s and 90s really overstayed their welcome. You know, Family Matters just went like it just jumped the shark, and then over the like distant shark planet.
Oh, yeah.
And just kept jumping. Right. Yeah. I mean, like
Stefan Urkel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can even say nonsense. Full House is the same way.
Full House was. And I feel like Full House, and the fact that Fuller House came back for that novelty flashback season, and everyone, oh, ha ha, this is still. Oh, wait, they
this
renewed
is still
it.
Awful.
They're going to do a second season.
You know, as much as I hate to say it, it's one of my favorite shows, and I still record it in syndication. I've seen every episode half a dozen times. How I Met Your Mother has a terrible ending. I get what they're going for. I know what they're going for. But if they had ended that show at any of the points where they had intended to end it, ideally, if they'd ended that show in season one, episode 13, I'd have been happy. But if they'd ended it at the end of season three or the end of season six, or if they had actually committed to the premise and, you know, done something that didn't require all the characters to learn and unlearn the entire lesson of their life and then learn it again so they could unlearn it and then learn it again in the final season. Just, ugh. And, you know, I blame part of that on Steven's complaint about network television.
Yep.
Because
they don't know how to do anything different.
They don't. And they do this thing where they're like, we're going to wait till the last minute. We're going to wait till the last minute. And the creators are like, okay, well, we're going to make sure we have an ending ready in case you cancel us. Mm-hmm. And then they wait till the last minute and that ending is there and it's set up and it's all put together. And then they're like, nope, you get another season. And you're like, damn it, ABC. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, one could argue like the Justice League animated series was the same way, where they never knew if they were going to get renewed for another season. So they always made the ending like, this is the end of all of it. And so you'd get this great epic finale of a season. You're like, oh my gosh, how are they going to top that? This is the great way that it ended. And then you're like, oh, it's coming back. How are they going to do that? And then they just keep repeating it. So it becomes somewhat frustrating.
And yeah, arguably that very last season, you know, it still had good stuff in it, but the ending is underwhelming because it can't compete with the last three endings that they did.
Right.
You know, because it's like, yeah, it's like, and then the world ended, but then it came back and now they're all living with their parents.
And they're just all Funko Pops. Yes.
Yep. Absolutely.
Stop saying Funko Pops. Those things are creepy and they scare me.
Good. I'm going to get you a whole bunch of them for your birthday.
They have little black eyes like a shark and big rubbery heads.
Yeah, I walk.
Do. Actually, they're hard plastic.
I walk into stores and like gas stations and stuff, still see all of these like fidget spinners for sale, but no one's talking about fidget spinners anymore. So I'm just like, man, that trend walking, right? It's like... you know, I'm sure people are still buying them, but it's like, I think everybody stocked up on them and like new companies that just did the fidget spinner model. Cause it must be like, you must be able to put it together from like standard parts or something like that. Because I see lots of different brands of fidget spinner.
Oh yeah. You can buy these things off Amazon for like, $20 for 100.
Yeah.
The little, skater, whatever those things are.
Tech deck dudes.
No, it's whatever you call these little ball bearing things that they are. But yeah, you can buy a whole bunch of them. I bought some and then 3D printed them for the boys, and they got a kick out of that. So,
yeah.
Cool. Speaking of things that have stuck around too long, our good friend Carl wrote in our last episode. Now listen, don't be laughing. Why does that get a bigger joke than my open of this show?
Because I've known Carl since 1990, which is almost as long as I've known you. And when Carl burns you that hard, with him as well.
He's not burning anybody. He's just talking about in our top five action movies. It's our 170th in the show of the series. It's the 21st episode in which Surf Nazis Must Die has been mentioned. So now with this show, Carl, you can mark that down of 22 times.
22
episodes. That Surf Nazis has been mentioned. Surf Nazis Must Die has never appeared as an actual entry on any list. And now,
and do you,
Carl,
know why that is?
You know it will, because now Matthew will ruin the joke.
No, I will not. I will keep the joke going for eternity.
Yep. Until also, I have worn out its welcome.
Yes. It should be noted that he's going to need to go through the Zach on Film archives, because that joke originated in Zach on Film.
He's specifically talking about top five, because he's been cataloging like all of the shows.
He's a librarian. That's what he does.
No, it's been a really great list. He's shared that with us and everything. So it's really cool. Listeners, here's where you come in. Here's where we need your help. We need you to go over to majorspoilers.com. And in the comments section for this episode, we need to have you share your top five things that have stuck around too long. Back it up with some facts. Back it up with some sound reasoning. Don't just go football stuck around too long because, you know, I hate football. No, give us some good thoughts and some good reasonings, and we'll check them out, and everyone else will check it out, because everyone loves a list, and we'll talk with you soon.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
Major Spoilers Podcast, copyright 2009.
Major Spoilers Podcast, copyright 2010.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2011. Major Spoilers is copyright 2012. Major Spoilers is copyright 2013. Major Spoilers is copyright 2014. This podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC. This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC. This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC. This podcast is copyright 2018 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, it doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.